week. We have been very blessed by y'all. I got a love offering in my mailbox. I got a gift certificate in my mailbox. And then Wednesday before Bentley's surgery, a big box showed up at our house with a sunshine as a sunshine box for him. And it had more gifts in it than is good for any four-year-old on the planet to get at one whack. But that was very generous and a huge blessing. He still hasn't opened them all, and it's kind of nice to have him as a... He's doing good, but he does have some pain, and it helps distract from the pain and works as a bonus for when he takes his medication that he really doesn't like to take. So thank y'all for that. Thank you very much. I don't know why God wanted me to preach this message, but it's the only thing I could... The only thing I felt like he was laying on my heart. And it's not like I don't... Like I feel we've not been taught this before. I think we've been taught it a lot, and I think it's good. I want to talk about godly marriages this morning. Now, when I say that, I know probably a lot of the youth and a lot of the unmarrieds are settling back and they're looking to take about a 30-minute snooze. Just hear me out. Don't go to sleep on me. Because whether you're married this morning or not, you're a product of a relationship between a man and a woman. And how that relationship was, and the relationship between that husband and wife, their love for each other, their respect for each other, had a big deal with how you look at marriage today and how you're living your life today, whether we admit it or not. So if you don't get anything else out of this message, the least you could do is go, if you had a mom and dad that truly loved each other, you could go back and say thanks for loving each other, even though we're humans. Times aren't always easy in marriage. Go back and thank your parents for giving you a stable upbringing. Marriage is one of the ordinances given to us by God. And it's a beautiful gift that God has given us. It was a gift he gave us thousands of years ago, and it can be a very tiny piece of heaven on earth if we let it. And it can also be absolute misery if you let the devil mess with it. The devil is not a creator. That's not original with me. I heard an evangelist say that one time. He can't create anything, but he can take what God has built and just take it and twist it, and he can mess it up, and y'all know as well as I do how he can wreak havoc. It seems like before you're married, there's a pull. When I was dating my wife, there was a pull to get together, and it's God-given. There's no sin in that. But the devil, before you get married, tries his best to get you together. Immorality, whatever you want to call it, he tries to get you to join in ways that you should not join. And then the second after you say your marriage vows, it's almost like he's standing there with a wedge and a sledgehammer, and any little crack he can get started in, he's trying to push you apart. He don't care where he finds a place to drive it. All he cares about is that he gets that wedge started between you and your spouse. That's how he works. And before you know it, if you're not careful, you find yourself being pushed apart by this wedge. And it's not a good thing. And before you know it, you start wondering if Jesus really meant what he said in Mark 10. And we look around and we see society around us. And it seems like everybody else looks at divorce as a non-issue. It seems like everybody else, remarriage is a non-issue. And then they look at the gay movement and they say, well, it's not nearly as bad as that. And I would never, never dabble in that world. And you have all these muddled lines. I found it interesting, an article I read in a magazine that was given to me recently. It used to be nearly impossible in the United States to get a divorce. You had to literally travel. South Dakota was one of the first places that you could get a lawful divorce. And it was that way for quite a while. Divorce was very rare, very frowned upon by society, and you didn't hear about it much. Nowadays, it's everywhere. It's common. It's everywhere. And you hear all these dismal statistics. There's this dismal statistic out there that 50% of all marriages end up in divorce. It sounds sad and hopeless, and why would you even try? But what's interesting, if you follow that survey all the way back, they counted in second, third, fourth marriages, however marriages you could imagine. They counted in widows and widowers getting remarried. So if you cut out those statistics, it actually takes it closer to 70%. Now that was an older survey. I don't know if that's still accurate today, but a 76% success rate, which is still dismal, but it's not as dismal as 50%. There was a study done by one of the men on Bill Clinton's team, oddly enough, back in the 90s. And they came up with a life success sequence. And basically it narrowed down to three things to keep you above the poverty line in America today. And those three things was in this order. Graduate high school. In other words, get an education. Stick with your education and get it. The second one was get married and stay married. And the third one was get a job and keep a job. And they came to the conclusion if you did those three things in that order, you had a 90, it was in the high 90s percent chance of living above poverty. And isn't that interesting that this thing of marriage is in the middle of that survey? It'd be a little bit tough to find any politician today to admit that that's the way it is, but that there, I think there's a lot of truth in that. God always looked at one man and one woman for life as a good thing for society. And we've been taught, most of us here have been taught, and rightfully so, that it's till death do you part. That's what the Bible teaches. And unfortunately, even in our Mennonite circles, we might not see a lot of divorce in our Mennonite circles. There are some, sadly. But what's just about as sad is to see two couples living together, and they're just about as far apart as if they were divorced. You know what I mean? The sad joke in society is that after a couple drops their last child off at college, they look at each other and say, "Who are you?" Implying that they were so busy raising their children, they never had time for each other. And they reach a point where they about don't know each other, even though they live under the same roof, they about don't know each other anymore. And that's sad. That's sad. Let me tell you a tale of two islands. Take a little trip in our minds, if you can bear it with me. Let's go up through New York and then on up through Canada. Let's go all the way to Alaska. And let's go north. Let's go up through Nome, Alaska, and then go even a little further to a little town called Wales, Alaska. And it'll be cold there. The interesting thing, if you look at a map, Wales and Alaska and Russia are 50 miles apart from mainland Russia. It's not very far over there. And about exactly between the two mainlands, 25 miles out, right in the middle, are two islands. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing these names right, but they're called Big Diomede Island and Little Diomede It's D-I-O-M-E-D-E. I guess that's how you pronounce that. That might be Russian. And these two islands out there are 2.5 miles apart, and they're almost identical. They're almost identical to each other. One's bigger than the other, and one's just a little bit smaller. They have the same weather. They have the same landscape. They're identical in almost every aspect, and they're really close together. Easy to see from one to the other. Both were populated at one time, and both the people on both islands were related. They had intermarried, and there was family connections between these two islands. Today, the big island is mostly unpopulated. There's a few visitors every now and then. And the little one has about 83 people on it year-round, a population of 83. Very identical, very close to each other. But the difference between these two islands is that right in the middle of them is a line. One is in Russia and one is in America. So there's a 21-hour time difference between the two. An article I read. Now, in the wintertime, you can walk from island to island on the ice. In the summer, you can take a boat over there if you wish. But as this one article I was reading stated, it can literally take, according to this man, 15 days to legally travel from one to the other, because you have to go all the way around through Russia. Now, I don't know what all he was figuring in that. There was probably I'm sure there was lots of paperwork, and I don't know how he came to his thing of 15 days. I'm sure you could do it faster than that legally, likely. But that's what he was saying. They're so close, yet they're so far apart. And sadly, that's how a lot of marriages are in America today and the world. They're so close, and yet they're so far apart, and they're surrounded by frigid waters, and they're almost impossible to get together. Now, there are stories of people that run back and forth. And if I lived on one or the other, I don't know, it'd be pretty tempting just to trot over there after dark and run around on the Russia side just to say you did. But it's illegal, and there's people that have been caught doing that. It's not really, I don't know if it's a risk I'd actually take, but, you know, maybe run over there and touch it, quick leave. But anyway, that's the example. That's unfortunately how marriages, if we let the devil start driving his wedge, we'll end up like that. We're going to read the rest of Ephesians. We studied it in Sunday school this morning, Ephesians 5. We read the first part, and now we're going to get to read the second part. Ephesians 5, 22 through 31. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious temple, or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own body. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, and of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and the two shall be joined, and shall be joined unto his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. But this is a great mystery in itself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband. That's probably about the most classical old passage in the Bible in relating to marriage relationships. And maybe y'all get tired of hearing that passage. But there's a lot that was wrote in that passage that still applies for us today. It was wrote by a single man, but he seemed to know some of the problems we still struggle with in this area of marriage relationships today. Y'all remember, most of y'all were probably at Marvin and Kim's wedding. You remember that message Joe preached, and I probably stole some ideas from Joe in this message, so forgive me for that, Joe. But selfish men and less than surrendered women is, as I remember what he said, one of the greatest dangers to a marriage. And I agree with that. It's pretty clear in this passage, God expects a marriage to reflect his love for his church. And when we spend most of our time being selfish men and less than surrendered women, we ruin that image God intended for the world to see in a Christian marriage. God's intent for a Christian marriage was to show the world what true love really looks like, and that two people, a man and a woman, can get together and be that perfect image God intended it for it to be. Even though we're not perfect, we can still get together and we can show the world that it can work Christ's way. We're all familiar with the idea of love and respect. Probably most of us have read that book. And it's so easy as a dating couple, it was so easy for me to think, how is it even possible not to love my girlfriend? You know what I mean? You about couldn't fathom it. But I'm human, and guess what? After you get married, I'm just as human as anybody else. There is, sometimes you have to work on that aspect, man, of loving your wife. And wives, see that you reverence or respect your husband. That's a big deal. Queen Elizabeth even understands that. Let me tell you a little story about Queen Elizabeth. I find her a bit intriguing. She seems like that relic from a different era, a relic from the past. But she understood this thing of respect for her husband. The story is told that back in the soon after they got married, I guess he still drove the car around. They didn't have a driver for the car, and she was riding with him, and they were in a hurry going somewhere, and I guess they almost hit something, and she gasped and caught her breath, and he looked over at her and said, "If you do that once more, I will put you out of the car." Now, he maybe shouldn't have said that. That maybe wasn't the correct thing for him to say. But asked by a reporter later, "Why did you put up with that? You're the queen. He's technically under you if you want to put him on a political level. Why did you hush up?" And she said, "Because he actually would have." Now, that's part of the story. The other part of the story is she truly respected him. She could have probably had somebody throw him out of the car if she wanted to. But she had enough respect to know that he didn't like her gasping at the way he was driving, and so she quit. She understood the thing of respect for her husband. And they were married for a very long time. He just died, a year or two ago? She understood. She got it. She understood the thing of respecting your husband. And I'm not saying, obviously, Queen Elizabeth is like anybody else. She's not perfect, but that was one aspect of marriage that she understood. And it's also very well known that he obviously adored her. There are some things we can learn from that. I can understand why my wife struggles to respect me sometimes. I don't always make the brightest decisions, but if she, even in my failures, can still look, after I crashed something, if she can still look at me and say, "I respect your decision," and she stands up for me, that's a big deal. That's a big deal. All right. What about going the extra mile in loving and respecting each other? Jesus was teaching in Matthew 5:41 about treating our enemies and going the extra mile with them. And I don't want to pull that scripture out of context. He was literally speaking about your enemies, I believe. But what about our spouses? What about our husbands and wives? Am I willing to go the extra mile for my wife? And I'm going to get kind of practical here, so just bear with me. But do I do more in my house than what's culturally expected of me? I had a cousin. I used to stay at their house, actually, in Davis County when I was dating. And his wife, above the kitchen sink, had a little sign that said, "No man has ever been shot for doing the dishes." I always wanted to look at that and say, well, surely somewhere in pages of history, somebody. But no, that's not the point. The point is, it doesn't hurt us men to go wash the dishes every now and then. It really doesn't. It doesn't hurt you. It's not going to hurt us to vacuum the floor or mop or do those things that we consider to be the ladies' job. Sometimes mom needs help around the house. Are we willing to do it? Am I willing to do it? Sometimes we need to watch the children and let her take a break. Being a mom's hard work. Did y'all know that? I don't know if I could stay at home with them two boys of mine 7 days a week. I go to work and I get a break, and then I come home and I can handle them again. Now, obviously, that's a little bit exaggerated. I love my boys. But being a mom there all day long, listening to the squabbles and straightening out arguments, that's hard work. Be open to the needs of the household. If she needs a break, it's probably a good thing to let her go have a break. Let her go shopping with her friends or go to coffee. I can shout. I could go out in the yard all day long and shout at the top of my lungs at how much I love my wife and not do a thing around the house. But it would actually, I'm almost positive, she would prefer I just quietly go in the house and do some things for her sometimes instead of verbally shout it to the whole world. So let your actions prove your love, man. Another thing I want to say along with that is in our trying to help in the house, this has been me already. You try to help and you try to do a good thing and you almost wreck something. My wife has this nonstick pan or whatever. And I had no idea. I was washing dishes in complete innocence, and you run a charboy over this thing, and supposedly it wrecks him. And I found out later that's a big no-no. Now, she caught me doing that. She could have came up to me and said very vehemently not to do that, and this wrecks it, and all this stuff. But she didn't. She seen me using it. She just quietly said, "Hey, that actually wrecks the pan. Probably better not do that." That actually makes me want to help more. If she had walked up to me and yelled at me about how bad of an idea that is, it would have made me want to, all right, I'm out of here. I don't even want to help if that's the way it's going to be. So if you catch your husband helping you and he's doing it not quite perfectly, be gentle with him. And the same way with us men. My wife has already helped me out in the shop, and she's done some things that, the way she was doing it was more in the way than more and not necessarily that big of a help. But be glad she's out there trying and helping, man. She's trying. She probably wants to be out there with you. She's probably not out there for the pure joy of it and the dust and the dirt. So if she's helping you, be grateful for it. And if she does a few things wrong, I'm not saying you should never gently tell her, show her a better way of doing it. But who cares? Let her help you, even if it's wrong. Another point I have here is beware you were raised in different households and you don't always see eye to eye. No duh, right? That's pretty basic. There are those weird little pressure points that as couples we can have sometimes that looking back later, they're silly. But maybe it caught you on a hot day or something, and it just rubbed you the wrong way. Beware of those little pressure points. Recognize them. It's going to sound foolish to y'all probably, but we have a couple of those in our relationship. And one of them is how to wax a car. Now, who would argue over how to wax a car? But you see, I grew up back a gravel road on a farm. We didn't wax cars much. And the way I waxed a car was as quickly as possible because I really don't like to clean vehicles that good. So if I wax a car, I'm liable to do it in the full sun and let the sun bake the wax on so I can quick take it off. And I know that's not the right way to do it. But and my wife was raised where if you wax a car, it's a 12-hour deal. You delicately wash the car and you delicately dry it, and it needs to be in full shade, and it needs to... And we could almost got under each other's skin on how to wax a car. And now we look back at it and we kind of laugh. And if she wants to wax it her way, that's fine. If I do it my way, that's fine. But don't let the devil get his little wedge between you and over a little thing like that. Same way with mowing a yard. I in the spring, when it's time to mow the yard for the first time, you get on the mower and you chop up all the limbs that fell down that's over the winter, and you put new blades on it and you keep going. She grew up where you push a wheelbarrow around the yard for however long it takes, and you pick up all the sticks so you don't ruin the blades. So in the spring, we just kind of chuckle at each other. And if she gets to the wheelbarrow before I get to the mower, well, then that's fine. And if I get to the mower first, well, then we might need to buy new blades. So just be aware of those little... Laugh about it. It's okay. But these are little instances in our marriage that if you're not careful in the wrong moment, they can be a place where the devil will start to drive his wedge. Do things for your spouse... Do things your spouse likes, even if it's not your favorite thing to do. After all, who are you trying to impress anyway, right? Us men, or for myself, there's certain... Okay, I have certain favorite shirts and I have certain favorite pants, and I tend to keep and hang on to these things for longer than I should. So if I come home and... my favorite shirt's in the trash can because she deemed it too worn out to wear to work anymore, or favorite pair of pants or whatever. Well, she's probably trying to spruce me up a little bit so I don't go into society looking like a rag. So I can, you can, even though it, sometimes I'm like, where'd that whatever go? She'll just kind of grin. Well, obviously it's time for that to go. So just thank her for taking care of you. Same way with my wife. She has her likes and dislikes. I know she has a certain flavor and coloring of dresses that she prefers, and she knows I kind of favor the other colors. Now, she could just make the colors that she likes, and who cares about me? But she doesn't. She does wear some of those. But generally, she tries to please me as her husband. Even though it's not her favorite way to go about it. She's still trying to impress me, and that's the correct attitude. And women do that for your men if you know he has preferences. Another point I have here is, ladies, let your husband provide. It's hard to explain, but there's something in us men that want to provide for our wife and our families. And I think it's a God-given thing. There's something God placed in us men that we want to... It makes me feel good to be able to buy groceries for our family, or to take it out to supper or ice cream or do little things that they enjoy. It makes us feel good when we can do that. So let him do that. I got no issue with newly married couples both working. My wife, when we first got married, had several cleaning jobs, and it was actually a blessing. If I remember right, she made enough money to take us to Africa the first time we went. And Also, in a brand new marriage, it can help distract a little bit. That's not all bad. But something about now that we have boys, she's home full time. There's a blessing in being able to provide for her and the boys. And how do you even say it? Well, there was a study done. I know I'm repeating a bunch of studies, but they're a bit interesting. They took pictures of women, their faces, and they put them all on a paper, and then underneath each picture, they put down their name and their job description. And then they took these men and they asked them which faces were most attractive to them. And they had underneath under it as descriptions things like school teacher, nanny, housekeeper, and then they also had doctors, lawyers, high income earners. You follow what I'm saying? And when these men were surveyed as to which ones they found most attractive, they did the first survey, then they took the same names and put different job descriptions under it and mixed them, reshuffled them. And wonder of wonders, the ones they thought were most attractive were not always actually the most physically attractive. They were the ones that they looked at as lower income producers because they realized they could be providers. Whereas if it's a doctor or a lawyer, they have no need for me. You follow what I'm saying? So there is something God put in us men that makes us want to provide. And so if you think us men always run around just chasing a pretty face, that's not quite true. We want somebody there that we can provide for. So keep your hobbies, keep your little side income. I don't really care, but just be aware that if you are making a big difference in the household budget, there could be a little bit of the man starting to feel like he's not needed. Maybe you call that ego. I don't know. Maybe, but I'm just saying, I know if my wife way out earned me, I would probably struggle a little bit. And having said all that, I got no problem with, the doctor I use in Cave City there is a lady. I got no problem with her making more money than me. It's not about that. It's about my household and am I actually able to provide. It's about time to close here. Another point I have here is don't use revenge in a marriage. Now let me explain that. Sometimes we feel like if my spouse doesn't like whatever and they ask me to give it up, or they would prefer I give it up, and I know that. And so my first reaction is, all right, I'll give it up, but if I give that up, then you're going to give up this other thing over here that I don't quite like you're doing. That I don't think that's how Christ loved the church. I don't think that's a Christian attitude, quite honestly. Whatever happened to giving up all of myself for my spouse? And if my spouse wants me to do something different, can I just do it different? Or does she have to give up something too so that it makes me feel better about it? All right, closing this down, I do want to say I am very grateful for some of the older couples that we have in this church that prove to us you can be married God's way for a lifetime. Society would have you believe, and a lot of this comes from the evolution theories, if you trace it all the way back, but they want us to believe we're sophisticated animals. And we know how animals act. That is not how God intended us as humans to act. One man, one woman for life is the way God meant it. And please don't let what the world, we live in this world, we can't help it, but we can let those thoughts creep into our minds if we're not careful. Don't let it happen. If you're a married man here this morning and are a married woman, God brought you together and he intends, that's the way he intended it, and he intends for you to stick together. We're not animals. We're created in God's image. Proverbs 5:18 says, "Rejoice with the wife of thy youth." And that's the way God intended for it to be. And I've met some older couples that have been such a blessing. You see them riding around together in a truck, and if it's an old truck where she can sit in the center, I seen that the other day. I know a lot of vehicles ain't like that anymore. But if it's a truck with I seen an old grandpa and a granny riding in a truck with a bench seat, and she was sitting in the center. And it wasn't because the passenger seat was full. She was there because she wanted to be there. That's a beautiful picture. It's not just the young marrieds that need to do that. And women, us men, we need you. We need you. The old saying of behind every successful man stands a woman is true. Whether it's your mother, whether it's it could be your wife, should be your wife. That we need y'all. We certainly do. I need my wife. I gave my mother-in-law that saying one time, but instead of, it said, behind every successful man stands a surprised mother-in-law. And she actually hung it on her fridge for a while. That was a dandy. So men, protect, men and husbands and wives, protect and cherish your marriage. The vows you made are a big deal. But your love for each other is a big deal too. And your children are watching. The community around you is watching. And are we proving that what God said in his word, one man, one woman for life, are we proving that out? Or do they look at us and say, we ain't a whole lot different than anybody else? Y'all might not actually separate, but you may as well be. How are we? How am I doing in that? I think we're going to close with that. Why don't we kneel for prayer?